in 5, 4, 3, 2.
I missed out on the fact that it was I figured, you know, you're talking about at the gym and everything, doing a little sparring practice, a little boxing, a little cardio.
A lot of things on this show.
Neighbor knocked on the door and he's like, hello. And he's like, hit me in the stomach.
Can you hit me? I don't want to go to work today.
I want you to hit me in the stomach as hard as you can. I'm like, sir, you are 20 years late for that line. I'm sorry.
If you hit me right here, I'll throw up. And I want it to go into work.
But you hit me in... for today, but if you hit me right here, you break a rib. I don't have to go to work for like a month. So please choose wisely. He didn't pay me, so I didn't do it. Anyway, the moral of the story is, if you're good at something, don't do it for free.
Yes,
like this podcast, which we do for free.
So
it means we're not good at it.
Yeah, so by that logic, we're not good at it.
But you all continue to show up. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing so. And welcome back into the show. We're excited because we have a returning guest for the first time. And you are here for our 100th episode, and it's almost been 100 episodes since then. Where this is 166.
Crap. Yeah.
So that was back in the summer of 2022. Time flies.
It was?
Yeah.
That did not seem that long ago.
Yeah. I know.
At all.
Exactly. Yeah. We talked about Willow.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. And now another thing we haven't done in a couple months is we haven't done a six mix.
That's true.
We've had
the popular segment or popular episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, we did. Last one we did was with Jeff Wright. Welcome back into the Radcast. Yes. I'm Steven.
Matt.
And yes, you know us though by now. But last time we did one of these was with Jeff Wright, and then we went into martial arts month, and then throughout April we talked about WrestleMania. We talked about a couple years in the 80s, but now we're back talking about the various someone's experience with nostalgia through these six questions.
Yes.
And we'll cut right to the chase. Bet, joining us again is our brother Andy. Hello.
Hello, Andy.
Hello.
Hello.
Check out that voice. Huh?
His classic line, hello.
Yes. It's well known. I'm actually more well known for my lines, and
yes.
And But
and
today,
yeah,
huh?
What?
It's usually how I introduce myself when I walk into a room. Is I go, huh? Because I have no clue usually why I either came into the room or I left the room and came back to the room. And I've been told that I have an excellent
voice. Don't do that.
Ooh.
like a tuning fork.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
pipe.
If it was the 90s, then I would definitely have a Time Life original series of cassette tapes.
Yes.
The Sounds of Andrew Webster.
Uh-huh.
Cool.
I feel like we really missed something with that. But, you know, hey.
I definitely missed it.
You can talk about it, your various experiences from these questions.
Oh, absolutely.
I guess.
Yeah. Lots of talk of the 90s coming up.
Yes. It sounds like you are with the and ums and ums. You're perpetually in a state of confusion and uncertainty. Yeah.
This is, it's one of the many titles to my my biography that I'll be working on here in the next, I don't know, maybe a few years. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I got to live a little bit longer.
Maybe a little longer.
Maybe.
Or actually become an interesting person that's done some things.
I was going to say, Justin Bieber has a biography, I think. I don't know.
But
like Simon and Schuster probably had like 12 ghostwriters write that
one.
That's
true.
Yeah,
maybe even one of the writers from the show Ghostwriter.
I mean, what experience does Justin Bieber have?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
has he ever done that would be interesting enough to read about? I mean, really.
He's never been on this podcast.
Sang some songs for YouTube, and then Usher called me up, and here we are.
And then it begs the question, why is Usher so active in searching for children on YouTube?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know.
Another podcast. Question for another time.
This isn't one of those true crime podcasts where we put Usher on the chopping block.
This is an exposé. Like they're going after P. Diddley.
Yeah. Exposé sounds like one of Usher's album titles.
Yeah, probably.
Nah, that was a band in the 90s, right?
Exposé. It was probably like, I think it was like a girl group or probably one of the myriad of girls and boys groups that were littered throughout the late 80s.
I don't know, bad money.
Yeah,
because
music was more like middle school gym classes, mm-hmm. you know, but it separated boys and girls.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
No commingling there.
Yes, yeah. The only segregation should be between the sexes.
Yeah, exactly.
So says me. So says I.
Yes.
Any of those possessive
public
forms.
Public bathrooms have it right.
Yeah, exactly. For those of you still listening, and where you can find us, always find us, whether you are still listening and you want to rip us a new one, as Shakespeare would say, where can they find us?
Instagram. We're on Instagram. We're at the Radcast. Cast is spelled with a K. Radcast is all one word. As far as podcast apps go, any podcast app, you're listening to us now on a podcast mm-hmm. app. So there it is. So mm-hmm. whatever podcast app you listen to, if they have an option to rate and review, 5 stars helps us out. Give us a review. It's very nice of you. And yes. if you're on our Instagram, the link in our bio is to our Redbubble, to the Redbubble page of Jeff Wright Designs. Mm-hmm. And over there, we've got a couple designs up for merch. So get on shirts, mugs, stickers, magnets, anything that, any sort of accoutrement, mm-hmm. knickknack that you want to have in your house, go ahead and do that. And then there's a couple more designs per Jeff Wright in the works.
Yes. So. He's got a couple more coming down the pipe whenever he gets them done. He's a busy man.
Busy man.
He's very, very busy man. We're talking to a guy who say he's a busy man. Would you say you're a busy man?
I would say I stay pretty busy.
That's good.
Yes. I stay pretty busy.
That's good. Yeah. Interesting.
Intriguing. Yes. Busy is a relative term. Yeah. What is busy to you?
Busy to me is,
the busy world of Richard Scarry? Yeah,
it's a balance between time and energy. And, as of late, I've been feeling like I've neither had time nor energy. So I'd say that would make me very busy. Now, whether it's productive busy or just busy in a general sense of a lot of stuff going on. That's definitely been true. It is spring. Spring has sprung.
It's
true.
Yes,
baby got back.
I'm often out at my partner Leanne's place.
Of course.
And spring has sprung with a vengeance out there. So, grass is growing and weeds are growing too. And there's garden stuff to plant. But, work has been going steady and that's been well. But, just staying busy with a lot of seasonal choring.
Cool.
Of course.
Speaking of weeds, happy 420, everyone.
That's right. Yes. 420. Those who celebrate it.
The Lord's weed.
Those who celebrate happy 420. That's when we're recording this.
Yeah.
So it's funny. This is on 420.
Ah.
So make of that what you will. But for those of you just listening, if you saw Andrew's name on here.
You know I celebrate 420.
Yes.
That's not what I was getting at.
That's
why we have him here today.
It's just lined up that way.
It's just a coincidence. Mm-hmm. Nice little coinkydink.
And for those of you that are here for Andrew, if you're listening, you've never listened to us before, but you saw his name on here or he suggested it to you or what have you, whatever. For whatever reason, if you've never heard of Six Mix, we take these six questions inspired by Brett Goldstein's podcast, yada, yada, yada. Films to be buried with, which are all six film-centric questions, and that's how somebody he gets to know somebody in their life experience. We took that idea, took a couple about movies, but then the other four are other just nostalgic-related things. And we love it because we get this peek into people's lives, and then there's secondary conversations that come up from it. It's genuinely cool moments where they're like, oh, well, I saw this. And we're like, oh, no way, that's cool. Yeah. And it's just cool to hear somebody's life experience through some of these more nostalgia centered questions.
Yeah.
So the conversation can go anywhere as long as the guest is open to it.
Yes.
Like we won't ever force a guest to talk about things that they won't want to talk about.
Yeah.
But here we will start with things that we've asked you to talk about. So we're going to get started here. The first question is, what was the first movie you remember seeing in the theater?
Now, this was one I did have a little bit of trouble with. Actually, I should say I'm going to probably preface every single question with an answer with,
of course.
With that. I had to sit down and really think.
That's all right.
That's why we send these in advance, because this is very difficult, like on-the-spot stuff.
Yeah.
Or you may say something, and you're like, oh, no, this was it. Mm-hmm. And later, and you're like, oh, I should have done that.
But, it was one of those things I started thinking back as far as I could. And I have vague recollections of, you know, of course, seeing, I think it was like Snow White or some of these re-releases that mm-hmm. kind of were coming up in the 80s. But really, my first movie-going experience that I remember, first off, knowing what I was going to go see,
right.
And actually being excited to go see it, was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Ah, yes. Uncle Scott took you to see it, right?
Famous story.
Yeah.
With the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
You guys don't know this story?
Yeah. And honestly, I don't even know if Uncle Scott listens to this or would remember it, but basically the story goes is that I really wanted to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Now, of course, anyone that has seen this movie knows that it is it's more of an honest take of like the comic book.
Yeah.
And it has a very underground feel to it. Yeah. It's way more gritty than the comic. Than the cartoon. It's fantastic. And I'm actually glad that you just dropped the fuck word.
Yes.
Because
we can say the fuck word.
Oh, fantastic. Because I was actually. I'll focus here, but I'm glad to know that those are the parameters. I forgot what they were, but either way, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I wanted to see it so badly. Mom was not down for it,
mm-hmm.
but of course, our Uncle Scott, I gotta say, what a fantastic uncle. Taking me to ball games and hockey games, stuff like mm-hmm. that. But a moment that I'll always remember. Is him deliberately ignoring his sister and what she said to do as far as what I was allowed to do and took me to go see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
And I was so excited.
Yes.
And I loved it. And there was a tinge of, I'm not supposed to be here.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to be watching this.
Mm-hmm.
That I think really helped that moment, not just because I was into the, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like mm-hmm. everybody else was at that time.
Yeah.
But that, you know, it was that kind of first taste of illicit.
Yeah.
You know, anything you know, besides occasionally, you know, stealing a Tootsie Roll or something like that, you know, getting a snack I wasn't supposed to. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was the first movie going experience I remember and I still hold on to, and it's very dear to my heart. And also shout out to Uncle Scott if you hear this. That was awesome and I appreciate you for it.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I forgot about that until you said it, which
that's
is crazy
because
you said it's this famous story.
It's not really famous. And I think it's like cool story, bro.
When I think about that movie, that's one of the things I think about.
I think it's because I had forgotten that could have, and with people we send these out to, sometimes I can maybe figure out somebody's answer, but I just wasn't thinking about it. So when you brought that up, I was like, oh yeah, and I instantly was like, oh, famous story, because we talk about how like mom was really pissed off that happened, but you got to see it, and I vaguely remember this. I remember more posters, like a little more vividly, because the three of us shared a room at one of the houses we lived at.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember very vaguely the poster that's actually
the movie poster
on the wall in the studio it's not the same. It's not the one from that house, but it's the same. But I remember that was on the door.
I believe that was also a gift from Uncle Scott.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was a birthday related thing
Mom's face
what.
In it. Yeah.
But and here's the thing. It's hard to remember.
Yeah.
I remember getting the poster, and it was Grandma and Grandpa lived in Roxana, Illinois at the time. Mm-hmm. Uncle Scott had this sweet spot up the steps, basically like an attic-type room,
cool.
like the Nintendo and the Sega and all kinds of awesome stuff, especially as a kid when you're like, oh, wow. You know, and also it's a reminder, too, that you know, Uncle Scott, he's older than I am, but he was very much like
–
you know,
he was a teenager when you guys were little kids.
Yeah, he wasn't as old as I think he is now. You know, that sounded really stupid. But
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
But yeah, I remember very distinctly being at Grandma and Grandpa's house and getting that poster. And I think that was maybe around the same time that that mom was like, don't take him to go see this movie.
Mm. Oh, so you got the poster before you saw the movie.
It's hard to remember. I believe it was posted before the movie.
Okay.
And it's something I ran into time and time with these questions, was like trying to actually get like what I thought was an accurate memory
right,
of
right.
of answers that I could give to these questions, because so much of it was back in the 90s. And it was and I don't know. We can get more into the nostalgia, but
I mean, it's back in the 90s. But then, when you know, as you get older, then the further back you have to reach, so many occurrences in your life, so many moments, so many instances mirror other times. Yeah. So you're like, was that moment? Oh wait, no, this was the instance. Blah 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's that. Yeah. That's where it gets kind of tough when we appreciate when anybody can pull stuff like that. It's great. We can appreciate when anybody can pull something out.
And that was a real fun question to kind of like. Kind of let sit and simmer, because again, I saw all six questions at once. In the first one, I was like, "Oh my god! I'm like, what was my first movie memory?" Like, I have a few memories of going to see movies with the family, and there was a lot of us. Mm-hmm. For those that your first time listening, you know, there are. I'm one of six. And Matthew and Steven are also one of six.
Yeah.
And,
I would even throw in seven.
I would say seven. And that's for. Other reasons, but we it was a big family. It's tough to go see a movie, even like if it's beside, you know, we had like dollar shows, kind of not too far from us. So I remember us going to see George of the Jungle, which is like, I don't know if Tyler was even was born then, but like it was one of those minivan moments of going and seeing it, and Dad was even there, and that it just the whole family was actually able to kind of go and see a movie and enjoy it, which. It was a very isolated incident.
Mm-hmm. But, and I think that's where the importance of like Uncle Scott came in. Someone who was, you know, he's 10 years younger than Mom. So like when in 1990, when the first TMNT came out, you know, he's 20.
Yeah.
So like when Mom and Dad, and that was right when Matt and I were born, that just became when everything, like, I'm not trying to be funny here, but I mean, just as far as like workload goes with kids and twins and all, so it got just a lot harder to be able to afford some of these privileges with like you, Samantha, and Amanda, definitely. So that's where like Uncle Scott came in, being on the younger side, being able to provide those instances. Mm-hmm. Mom and Dad can't get us those Star Wars toys, but Uncle Scott can. Yeah. Mom and Dad can't always get us these sports cards, but Uncle Scott and Aunt Allison can.
You know, and there's a couple, I'm going to riff off it real quick. There's a couple other moments when it comes to either movies or, I don't know, media that Uncle Scott was influential on, but also like when they re-released the original Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
I remember he took me, and I think it was even maybe, this is the hard part, I think it was even still in Florissant. It was a movie theater at Cross Keys, in Cross Keys Shopping Center. This place does not exist anymore. Yeah. It has been paved over and is a whole new kind of spot. But him taking me to see the re-release of, I believe it was the first Star Wars movie. But also, and man, this never came to fruition, but he gave us our Sega system. And he was the advocate, and was going to, but Mom completely shut it down, buy me a copy of Mortal Kombat.
Man. Yeah. I never knew that.
I remember it was the house on Swallow Lane that Grandma and Grandpa own and live in now.
Yeah.
And it was very much like in between the kitchen and the dining room. And Uncle Scott was trying to defend the fact that he's like, come on, it's not a big deal. Like, you know, the kid can play Mortal Kombat. It's not that big of a deal. It's not that bad. But Mom was very much anti Mortal Kombat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as many moms were at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that was another nice memory. I could probably give way more as far as those fantastic interactions with Uncle Scott.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll limit it to just that movie experience. So again, shout out to Uncle Scott. Shout out to Uncle Scott on National Record Day. I believe it's today. Or was that yesterday? Did I miss that?
I don't know. There's a day for everything, it seems.
I don't know. And you can cut out some of the time in post, right? That's the story. Yeah. That's the ticket.
National Record Store Day is today.
It's today.
April 20th.
So again, shout out to Uncle Scott, and also besides Happy 420, Happy National Record Day.
Yes.
Record Store
Day. Record Store Day. Uncle Scott used to work in a record store.
Speaking of nostalgia places, like movie theaters, record stores.
Record stores. Sam Goody.
I mean, places like Vintage Vinyl here in St. Louis keep that alive.
Absolutely. I mean,
there are a few places we're lucky enough to have.
Yeah, and if you are
St. Louis, Euclid.
Yeah, if you're in St. Louis, definitely go check out Vintage Vinyl. Mm-hmm. Still a spot worth going to the Loop for.
Yeah.
Don't mind the parking. Just go check it out.
Just do it.
I'm pretty sure there's the Record Exchange over in Hampton that's over by me.
Mm-hmm.
So still haven't been there. So it might be like public records, not musical records.
Yeah, any kind of, and later on, I want to talk about, kind of these secondhand mall shops and places where it is more than records. It's like, more like used media and recycled media.
Like V-Stock.
Yeah.
Somewhere
like
that.
You still get the Blockbuster experience, but it's a little more varied.
Yes. Yeah. So moving on to the second question. Movie that makes you cry, if not cry, get emotional. Now, whenever I say movie, there's been a few times where people have turned that to TV because they're like, well, movies, I get emotional in movies, but movies don't really strike me the way TV does because TV has a wider storytelling element.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a movie has to really like hit you with the storytelling in order, I guess, to accomplish that. But I may change up the wording of the question, but for right now, it's movie that make you cry
I think
emotional.
I think it was a good question because, again, like you said, TV shows, especially now, you can tell a much broader narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You can build up characters more. But for a movie, especially, in a lot of these memories that I have are hour-and-a-half movies, not 2.5 hours, 3 hours like we're kind of used to now.
Mm-hmm.
They do have to do a good job, not just in dialogue and character casting, but the songs that they use and the musical aspect of things that really, again, we're going to talk about music more later, being such an emotive aspect. But honestly, immediately and every time I hear this question, there's two movies that come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
That is Babe.
It's been forever since
Babe.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Oh my God. Babe and Return to Me.
Oh, yes.
David Duchovny. David Duchovny and Minnie Driver.
I've never seen it.
It is heart-wrenching, and especially if you're enjoying a little bit of wine and you're by yourself. Overall, it's just this question kind of made me start thinking about, Babe is just, what was it about Babe that made me cry?
Mm-hmm.
What was it about these movies that made me cry? And usually, and I could list off a number of other movies that I've seen that made me cry, or certain genres of movies that made me cry. But for the most part, a lot of it is and Milo and Otis.
Yeah.
Even though it ends on a happy note. I think about that movie and I cry. Or, I can't I can look something up real quick.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so I have to look up this movie that I was watching the other night.
And
by other night, I mean 6 months ago.
Yeah, the other night is just so all-encompassing.
Yeah.
Say the other night, it's like, oh, you mean 2 years ago?
The other day. That was like 10 years ago.
But I do love how you mentioned the element of music contributing to what gets you emotional or crying about a movie. Because, whenever they use licensed music, that definitely helps. But whenever you have, like, I don't know how much I'd be moved by certain moments in, say, like the Rocky movies or Star Wars without Bill Conti musical sting or without John Williams musical sting.
Yeah.
Willow, we talked just harkening back to the last time you were on here, there's moments in the music in that really contribute to those moments to where it just puts it right over to the top.
Yep. Yeah, it really, and Matt, I don't mean to cut you off there.
No,
but I'm saying it is one of those things where the music and the scores that are put to movies really kind of drive how you're going to feel about said movie, or if you're going to cry, if you're going to laugh, if you're going to feel something. I'm still kind of looking for this this movie, and it was a recent one. And again, here I am talking about
Deuce Bigalow.
You know, Deuce Bigalow, male gigolo. I really felt for that character, and really, the one where Rob Schneider switched bodies.
Oh, the hot chick.
The hot chick. I mean, that was a tearjerker myself too, because there were a lot of self-discovery moments there.
Oh yeah,
and really at the heart of a lot of these movies that kind of hit my heartstrings, it's either an animal.
Of course.
The animal.
And again, I felt for him deeply in that movie, too. Because, I mean, imagine being a man that becomes an animal.
And all of a sudden, you're an animal. And I bet he'd be glad to hear people are sympathizing with him now, because he's even getting booed off the stage at MAGA-type events.
No one likes Rob Schneider.
Well, that's a shame, because I still have a
I can't get booked
spot.
Anywhere.
And, I'm trying to both process this question and talk, but at the same time, I'm on my phone. I'm trying to find this. And I'm trying to remember the name of the actor, and I feel terrible. I really did not come prepared for this.
Thank God
you have the ability to adjust this. And again, I'm trying to think. And we can record this too, as you guys try to help me figure it out. I can, you know, kind of do my Jeff Goldblum thing. And where he's like, he was in, it was the actor.
It wasn't the film, but it was starring Tommy Jones.
An Irish fellow
Japan.
That I'm just trying to
Colin
figure
Farrell?
It out. Yeah, Colin Farrell.
In Bruges.
It was another movie that came to mind. I was trying to find Colin Farrell's name. So actually, that helps. Right there.
Jake Vielewald used in Bruges, and he also used Banshees of Inisherin.
Which is a... You just said the name
was
of the movie.
Banshees of Inisherin?
Yes. So Banshees of Inisherin.
I wouldn't have remembered
that. Yeah. So there was a... And this is a very recent memory, which is why it kind of came to mind. And we can always double back to Babe.
Of course.
We can always double back to Return to Me. And mm-hmm. I mean, oh, my God.
Minnie Driver, hello.
Fantastic. I mean...
How about them apples? Different movie, but
yeah. Yeah, but there was a moment where again it's a lot of the movie's allegorical, but where all right again I'm gonna hem and haw, but I'm gonna look up the other actor that's in the movie that was also in Bruges. It's the other assassin that's in that movie.
And we even Domhnall Gleeson or Donald Gleeson.
Let me clear Donald this Glover. Up right. It's definitely not Donald
Danny
Glover.
Glover.
So, yeah, it's so again, it's Colin Farrell and
Brendan Gleeson.
So Colin Farrell is just he's best friends, I guess you're supposed to assume, with Brendan Gleeson. And those that have seen the movie know what I'm going to talk about, but. The fact that essentially Brendan Gleeson is like, listen, I don't want to be friends with you anymore. I'm tired of seeing you. And you don't really start realizing why until you get into the movie. And it's because he's like, all we ever do is sit around and drink a pint.
Yeah.
We're on this island in Ireland and we're not doing anything. And this whole fucking war is going on the other side there. But here we are isolated and we're not doing anything ever. So eventually, Brendan Gleeson's character, Calum Doherty, just gets so sick of it. And he's like, I don't want to be friends with you anymore. Mm-hmm. But Colin Farrell just can't stand it. He can't take it. He can't help himself. And it drives Brendan Gleeson's character to essentially start cutting off his fingers. He's like, listen, if you don't leave me alone and let me be in peace, I'm going to show you what I mean. I'm going to start cutting my fingers off one by one. It's, again, everything in this movie is allegorical.
Yeah.
And it very much is, my understanding is, it's a telling of the story of, like, Ireland, the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, kind of the strife that was going on in between those, the Protestants and the Catholics, but also just those that were part of the crown, those were not part of the crown, but how essentially, like, you're driving me to the point of self-mutilation to show you this is how much I don't want this to keep going. I'm tired of the same old, same old.
Yeah.
And throughout the movie, you find that Colin Farrell actually has this donkey that he is best friends with.
Yeah. Mm.
And for those that haven't seen the movie, sorry if this is a bit of
spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
He becomes a donkey
man. Super depressing.
Yeah.
No Midsummer Night's Dream here. Colin Farrell's best friend, which is this donkey, besides his sister that he lives with, loves this donkey. And immediately I see a donkey and my heart starts to go, oh my God, look at that donkey.
Jackass.
Look at that jackass. I love that jackass.
Reminds me of me.
Dead ass.
So essentially one of the fingers that Brendan Gleeson cuts off knocks on Colin Farrell's door. He's knocking on there, and then he just cuts off his finger and he leaves it for him. Mm-hmm. The donkey, which is out in the yard, mm-hmm. needs to leave, ends up eating the finger, choking, and dying.
Oh my God.
Colin Farrell comes back to see this, there's a moment in the movie where he's like slunched down in a corner, just needing some consolation, and the donkey comes in.
Yeah.
And it consoles him, and what a beautiful, innocent thing for just an animal to do and to show. And then we have this moment where Colin Farrell comes back, and there's the donkey dead. And they show you a dead donkey because he choked on the finger of the individual that he would not leave alone, that kept cutting off his fingers to prove a point. So eventually, his best friend, which is this donkey besides, the man that's cutting off his fingers, dies because of these actions. An innocent donkey dies. So bald. Was like, I looked over to Leanne and I was like, I can't do this. I got to leave. I got to go. I got to leave the room. I'm going to go make dinner. I'm going to go make some food. I'm going to go do something, because even though I understand the allegory that's in place, though I understand the story, anytime I see just a being that is filled with just, they're doing what they do, but they're also filled with love. They also, are an animal but have personality,
mm-hmm.
and so many animals have personality, but really movies that display both animals that we've given human emotions to, and then either dying or succeeding, bring me to tears. But really any movie where you have an individual that is just a representation of pure love, there's nothing in the way. Like an animal, if it loves you, it loves you. Like it's not thinking about, am I getting something in return? Well, besides me, food or trash.
Yeah, sure.
But animals are such a fantastic representation of those that are either just assholes or they're sweet, or they're just living out of this kind of very pure nature, to see them die or succeed or whatever. I don't know. Animals. Yeah. Just in general, when they struggle and we attach human emotions to them, bring me to tears.
Yeah.
So again, I talked about Milo and Otis, and I haven't seen that movie in forever, but like Babe, and that's a positive thing, but stories of triumph.
Yeah.
Stories of rejection, but that involve characters that just represent an essence of just, I don't want to say naivety, but just
purity.
And I struggle with the words purity and innocence, but
sure. Sorry.
But no, you're fine. You're fine. But these movies where essentially you attach these human elements to animals, always bring me to tears, or it's a love story. Return to Me, Minnie Driver needs a new heart. It turns out David Duchovny's wife, who died tragically, his wife's heart gets put into Minnie Driver's heart, and they see each other and they fall in love. But she never let him know that actually it was your wife's heart that let me live and be alive.
Oh, that's beautiful. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Beauty, suffering, these things bring me to tears because I can't help but feel them at a core.
Totally. Of course. So, I mean, they're beauty and suffering are two elements of the human condition that I think we feel the deepest, but also simultaneously it's a paradox that we also push them. We either try to avoid them or push them away. So I think when you allow yourself to let your guard down, something just indulging in an source of entertainment, like a movie, I think that's when it kind of can catch you off guard and it taps into that core of yourself.
It taps into something that you don't often see and that you long for. I should say many people, they long for an innocence and they long for just a purity of action, but also just a really good music score that brings it along and really pushes you over that edge to tears. And I could list a long list of movies, but a lot of it more is about me and the state of mind watching. Like I watched Goon the other night for the first time in a while. And there were a couple moments that, again, brought me to tears.
Yeah.
You know?
I get choked up during the end of Jingle All the Way.
Yeah. I mean, like,
it's situational.
Yeah, yeah. A good monologue, a place where somebody's an underdog that is not being accepted by those that they love, but represents this kind of childlike innocence.
Yeah.
And those that have seen Goon,
Sean William Scott's character
is just the sweetest human that also just has concrete fist, and he has a place in the world, and he's also not entirely bright, but he is just this kind of loving soul that just wants to help people get drafted into this thing where it's like, well, this is where I find value, and people, you know, my family is not accepting me of it, and I feel stupid, but yet I find value. You know, you can say what you want about the movie Goon as a whole, but those moments where you see portrayed things that you yourself have felt, and if you felt dejected or you feel like you're being a little naive, I cry at a lot of movies. So when I saw this question, I was like, oh God, like I gotta find. I Always Know Babe and Return to Me are ones that are not a condition of too much wine or loneliness that actually like still have that emotive response.
Yeah, this isn't being manufactured by these external elements.
I felt like those were decent kind of perfect parameters for the kind of movies that made me cry, but also a really good Hallmark movie. You know, even though it's rote, it's very formulaic.
They are formulaic, like, all the way to the damn bank.
I mean, there's a reason why they make a lot of good money.
Mm-hmm. So, exactly. But like a good performance from somebody just in the right moment, like a good line delivery, and it's like, shit, getting a little more,
a good monologue, a bit of tears, and the right kind of music. I'm a blubbering mess.
Yeah. Yep. And not going to get too, because it's still brand new, but three of us are watching X-Men 97.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
And if anyone else is watching it, all I have to say is episode 5.
Yeah.
And oh, yeah, it's fresh enough, it's new enough. I don't want to go further into it. Mm-hmm. But and that's where I think you had mentioned, Stephen, like some people get this question and they start going towards TV shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is very easy because, again, you are invested. Like, it's not just a character investment, but it's a time investment.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're binging or you're watching episode by episode, there are a number of shows that I've cried at just because you're like, I have seen so many episodes and now this character's dead.
Yeah.
Like, I am living this experience of like, well, this character just died in front of me and I cared about that character. I wanted to know more about that character.
Yeah.
You know, the nice thing is though about at least comics, you can always bring someone back from the dead, like a soap opera. There's always a caveat. There's always a dimension at play, a literal and figurative dimension that allows for these characters to come back. But this is something I do enjoy about movies. Is we got a period of time to tell the story.
So you only have that one shot.
Yeah, and you can make sequels.
Yeah. Sure.
But like you got this moment in time and you got this window and this opportunity to tell a narrative, to tell the story, and to create a moment that allows people to feel something, you know, that first off you get to feel, but also it's nice and it's controlled and you get to tell yourself afterwards. You get a nice cry and you go, well, this wasn't real. Like, is it real? Yes. But is this movie real? No. Was this experience actually happening? No. It's like, you kind of work some things out.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. And some place that you could maybe work some things out, depending on if you're a moody teenager maybe, and you just go to this place to go slub around at the food court. And that's if you had your way when you were a kid or as a teenager, where's the first store you're going to in the mall, and where do you eat at the food court? So it's kind of a twofer. Yeah.
So this, again, it's all about the eras.
Yep.
If we're using the pop language that Taylor Swift is.
Yes, yeah, so about to say, this is eras tour, if you will.
Yes, let me take you on my eras tour of the mall, which in of itself is a very dated statement.
I love the mall, though.
I miss malls.
Me too.
It's one of those things we enjoyed the convenience so much that we lost these kind of experiences that were more social experiences or, you know, you're at least getting out there and doing stuff.
Yep.
But to answer the question, early on, it would have been KB Toys.
Yes.
Was like an absolute have to go there because I want to see what the new action figures were. I want to go look at the toys. Like, these are all the things that, like, as a kid, or if it was like Toys R Us, which is not a mall. You're like, I want to go to, I want to go to the aisle that has like the game simulator. Like, they have the system set up and they have the simulator going, and you can like kind of take a second and play video games, which I'll reference kind of that, the roots of that later when you ask me about. We're talking about TV routines as a kid. But as a kid, though, KB Toys, I wanted to see when new action figures were out because that was one of my favorite things, was to look through catalogs or be like thinking about, like, oh, man, what action figures do I want?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the X-Men action figures were massive at the time. KB had all these exclusive lines that they – different characters. And as a kid, not getting to read a lot of the comics, getting exposed to characters that I didn't even know anything about that gave me that kind of feeling to go and explore it. Also, Ninja, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were still massive at the time. So many great toys, so many great action figures. I longed to go and just at least daydream about possibly getting a $4 action figure,
right?
You know, like something now you're like, oh my god, like I
nothing.
It's $20 like, Target. Oh man, the new version of that is like $24.
You want to win these one of these sweepstakes that Nickelodeon holds, so you can just run through that's a KB daydream. It's like, man, if I just got like a $100 gift certificate,
to this place. Absolutely. But as time went on, you know, trading card stores, there was a spot at I believe it was Jamestown Mall. Turn two.
We've
Turned
two.
We
talked about it on the show.
I mean, it's just kind of, and I think about it, I'm like, that's where I'd beeline to. I was so into collecting trading cards, and then as I got a little bit older, any kind of spot like a Slackers or a Turn Two, or when I finally kind of had. Turn Two is not a resale shop. I mean, say V-Stock.
V-Stock.
Yeah. So even V-Stock now, you know, kind of hitting that point where I actually had some money. I could actually go purchase things for myself. I was trying to get caught up on stuff I didn't experience music-wise or video game-wise and the things I kind of missed out on. Those were always the spots I wanted to go to first. And really the reason why I went to the mall, besides, you know, American Eagle back in the day or something like that to, or, you know, JCPenney to pick up a shirt for homecoming or you know, whatever. But as a kid, just KB Toys, and when I actually started having some money, Turn To or sports memorabilia shops, like stuff, trading cards, I just ate that up with a massive spoon.
Speaking of eating things up, where would be your spot in the food court?
So growing up, originally it was Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A,
And their, I can't remember the name of the artist off the top of my head, but he's like, you know, back in the day when Chick-fil-A was only found in a mall.
Yeah.
Like, that was what I knew about Chick-fil-A. Was, you know, it good chicken sandwich, waffle fries.
Oh, yes.
More than waffle anything. Fries, waffle fries.
Because you didn't find them anywhere else.
But then a little bit later on, when I was more independent, is any spot that did, like, Philly steaks.
So like Charlie's
or
something?
Charlie's. Or there was a spot at Jamestown Mall, and the name of the place is kind of slipping me. But they had a bourbon chicken and rice. Was it the Cajun Cafe, maybe? I ended up knowing the daughter of the people that owned it.
Yeah.
I was friends with her in high school and everything. And another, you know, she's never going to hear this, but, you know, first kiss, memorable. But so I always kind of think of her when I think of the Cajun Cafe.
You
know, there was one time I did, we went on a date and she was working at the family's restaurant.
Yeah.
You're going to help me work this restaurant.
Yeah,
that's
no.
Our date.
She at least was like, listen, I'm getting off work. Let me go and shower up because I'm going to smell like work. And I'm like, that's not a problem. I love the bourbon chicken
from
Cajun Cafe.
Yeah.
So let's go with Cajun Cafe. Let's call it that. But bourbon chicken from there, or the Philly cheesesteak place that was at Jamestown Mall. Again, Jamestown Mall, really For those that are listening and are familiar with the Florissant North County area,
yeah.
It was an institution for us.
Yes.
Was not able to really go to Northwest Plaza
much. Didn't go to the Galleria a ton.
Yeah.
Galleria was, it was always a special trip when we got to go to the Galleria. Mm-hmm.
Chesterfield almost never.
Yeah. And we didn't really go to Chesterfield Mall a bunch until Cindy, who would cut our hair all the time, where she started working at a place that was out in Chesterfield. But that was when Matt and I were in elementary school and middle school. We'd go out there and get our hair cut, and then we'd go to Chesterfield Mall.
Yeah.
So that was really the only way. But it was really a special occasion if we went to a Northwest Plaza or a Galleria or Mid Rivers, because they were further out.
Well, especially like in the times that I did get to go to Northwest Plaza. They had the tilt.
The tilt downstairs.
That was underneath the food court. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything else can go to hell. But tilt was it was a spot as a kid that I always was like, oh my God, I just want to go to the arcade. Yeah. I want to play the games. I want to do a little mini golf and all that. Which, funny story, a little bit later on, art teacher friend of mine, John O. Robbins.
Yeah.
You guys know him. Mm-hmm. He got an arcade game. It was like these dual tanks.
Yeah.
And it was one of those booth ones where you sit down and everything.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I'm helping him move it. And we're getting into his garage. And it's like, oh my gosh, here is a coin
from Tilt.
Was a machine from Northwest Plaza.
That's
from
this out there. Cool. Yeah.
That was actually, it was a nice little piece of nostalgia.
That's cool.
Yeah. So to answer your question, in summation, those that were trying to fast forward to a straight answer is
no.
First off, stop. Yeah. You're in the wrong place.
Because it's going to be in whatever mess we're talking about in there somewhere.
But it was always like KB Toys, trading cards, sports memorabilia.
Yeah.
And for me, it was either cheesesteaks, Chick-fil-A, or
some bourbon chicken.
You know?
Hell yeah.
Do you remember it's hard for me to people older than us. It's hard for me not to bring this up in arenas like this, because over your shoulder is the advertisement for the Batman Forever soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you that have been listening for a while or know that or know us, we attribute that as like what started nostalgia for us.
Yeah.
That and like Steven Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt and I. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That and Power Rangers. So thinking of Batman Forever, I don't know how much you can recollect about like the advertising for it all over the mall, because the biggest thing I think about is the Warner Brothers Studio store at the Galleria, and I don't know how much
I
remember that.
Very much remember that, because again, the Galleria was always a big treat getting to go there, because they had a Disney store, they had the Warner Brothers store.
Yep.
It was also a nicer area than we're used to, and it was the Galleria.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was that much nicer and special than
did an Auntie Anne's.
But it was just a special kind of thing getting to go there. But also, it's talking about movies and malls, like that was, I saw Toy Story there with my friend Nathan.
Nice.
His mom took us there. So it was also a really good movie theater, which kind of doubling back to Jamestown Mall, which, when I talk about Jamestown, you start asking me questions about the mall, I'm like, oh my God, like, how influential was the mall growing up? It wasn't just about the first store you're going to go to or the food court, but like it was the movie theater. It was the spot for first dates.
Yeah.
It was the spot for hangouts. Like you literally just be dropped off at the mall even before we had Rise, before we even had like the mills or anything, that's where you went and you just walk around and you go check out the store. You check out the Spencers, you check out, pretty much anything. It didn't even matter.
Yeah.
You were just hanging out with your friends.
Yeah.
It was free range, and they had a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
That was the best.
And movies were cheap enough at the time where, you just go check a movie out. Let's go to the movies tonight. What movie we're seeing? I don't know. Let's go to a movie theater and just pick out a movie because it's not going to cost us $10 for a ticket. It's not going to cost us a ton of money to go see it. But let's just go spend some time at the mall.
Yeah, that's where a lot of my affinity for it comes from, was that exact kind of experience. And, obviously we went to Jamestown, but like our sort of social hub, meet up with friends, mall was the Mills.
Teenage years and early years. Yeah.
And that was a big shift. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But still, like, that's where you, and I've said it on here before, it's where you get your first whiffs of independence. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, you get dropped off. Someone's parents are dropping you off there. Like, you're hanging out at someone's house and dropping you off at the mall.
Yeah.
And you're just walking around the mall. And
Yeah.
You're talking to your friends. You're like, let's go in here. Want to go in here? We're gonna, you're sitting on a bench just cracking jokes.
And there are some cute girls. And then we're puffing our chests out. Like, we're not going to go talk to them.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, none of us, we're all skittish.
Puffed out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it was a big social gathering place.
Yeah.
That was just open to anyone that wanted to. And especially when the Mills came along, we had, you know, an ice rink there. There was a bowling alley. There was the movie theater that, you know, see so many movies at the Regal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just trying to remember all the movies that you've seen because it was just part of life.
Yep.
These, well, let's go check out the movies. Let's go to the movies. Good memories, bad memories.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just, the mall was massive. And, but yeah, answering your questions. Yeah.
KB and
Chick-fil-A. KB Toys and Chick-fil-A would have been my 9-year-old dream.
Those are perfect. Question 4. So as a child or as a teen, what was maybe I need to stop making these so broad.
What's the question?
So the question is, as a child or a teen, what was your TV routine? So after
Could be
school,
both.
At night, you know, Saturday morning, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there were a few TV routines. It was actually early on, it was difficult to find a TV routine because it was very difficult to actually even just get access to and make a choice far as, like, you know, what we were watching, what we were doing. But I remember one of the first big ones was Saturday mornings. Just, I was up earlier than everybody else for whatever reason. It wasn't necessarily intentional, but this was my time to go out and I could play the Sega.
Yeah.
I could play, you know, some NHL 94 or 95. Mm-hmm. I could watch, you know, X-Men cartoons would come on. I could watch Bobby's World. I could watch my cartoons.
Yeah.
And I had a bit of, you know, choice in what I was watching. But yeah, early on, it really was just that early morning, Saturday morning, where everybody was sleeping in.
Yeah.
And I could catch a little bit of TV time myself. We just had the one TV, really, that was in the front. You know, the front room that we kind of hung out. And then later on, there was eventually a TV in the kitchen. So you could maybe at least watch a show or two while you washed the dishes.
Yeah.
So there was that trade off.
Yeah.
But before we even had, you know, TVs in our rooms and you guys eventually had access to, like, the cable and satellite and everything, you know, it was all about Saturday morning. I had a bit of time. And there was also another one, and again, you know, sorry, Mom, if you're listening to this, but I know she does. She loves you guys and is so down for listening to all of it. I mean, she's your biggest fan.
I mean, well, she says so, but, you know, we don't hear conversations behind closed doors.
Yeah. You know, she doesn't want to pick too many favorites, even though I'm sure I'm the one. But either way, one of the things we did have as a luxury growing up was cable, and we had HBO and we had stuff like that. So, like, once everyone was kind of finally asleep, I could kind of sneak out and I could finally go and watch some TV myself, whether it be, you know, stuff I shouldn't be watching on HBO or Showtime or Comedy Central or whatever.
Hooter Horse 4.
You know, I remember the Spawn cartoon being like, oh, my God, like, this is not a cartoon.
Yeah.
You know, here I am, and I'm like, American History X. Wow.
Yeah.
Like, you know, being
rated R movies we didn't have.
Yeah, I mean, or just be, God, 9 or 10 years old, and you're kind of consuming stuff again, kind of going back to what I said originally, that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles being that first illicit experience of being like, I'm not supposed to be watching this, that, you know, so you can't sleep. And so you get outside, you know, out to the living room and everybody's asleep, and you kind of turn the volume down, but you're just watching whatever you want. You have a bit of alone time when there's that many people around. You do have this kind of independence to start surf around and exposing yourself to whatever was on, whether it be good or bad. But especially, you know, in a kind of, you know, conservative, what we were allowed to do household.
Yeah.
Those were two moments that I really look forward to for whatever reason. But then later on, you know, usually pretty active after the school day in high school and stuff like that. But the occasions I got home first and could throw on, and this is a throwback, TRL.
Yes. TRL, yeah.
Like, and this, I mean, this was, even before it started really falling off, it was mainly just music videos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, just kind of trying to figure out a little bit more through pop culture of like, you know, so much of my time. And again, this was something I ran into a lot when thinking about these questions and kind of going through the nostalgia thing and kind of struggling with some of these memories, is so much of it is intermixed with where I was in life at that point. And, you know, church was a very big part of it. And I was very immersed in church, and I was, it was my whole life.
Yeah.
So a lot of the content that I was consuming, a lot of the music I'd hear, a lot of the things I'd watch, a lot of it was very much driven by that ethos that was part of that kind of church mentality, the youth group kind of ideas. And we can talk more about it when it comes to music, but, it was my way to kind of stay in touch with a lot of things that, you know, I wasn't necessarily being exposed to, or I didn't understand that I was exposed to, because you go to school and you're like, I have no clue what you're talking about. I'm not listening, at least in, you know, grade school, middle school, I'm not listening to a lot of the same music. I'm not watching too many of the same movies. I'm not playing a ton of the same video games. You know, it was different. So, you know, when I got home and I could just throw on some music videos, back when MTV just put on music videos, and you looked forward to seeing a really cool video or hearing a really cool song, and like, oh, I heard this on The Point the other day, and now I get to see the video. Like, again, a lot of this, so many of these experiences predated the ability to just hop online and consume, to hop online and to find the information, to find the music, to find the video. Like, this was still in the age of like LimeWire and Napster, where you're like, oh, I got to write that song down, or I heard it on The Point, I got to write it down, so maybe I can go, without anyone knowing, spend 2 hours to download a track and burn a CD. So that was something that kind of became an enjoyable thing, too, because I spent so much time playing sports and doing after-school activities, and there was usually somebody at the house that, when I was able to kind of get back before everyone else and like just kind of turn on the TV and watch some music videos. It was easy enough to raid the fridge and listen to music and kind of do all of that stuff.
And that, what a time capsule. Especially like, not just because it's like for you, but just in that time period of like the early 2000s. Like, our parents had Johnny Carson. We had Carson Daly.
How long
are you sitting on that one? A couple minutes.
Oh, Carson Daly. Is this where you want to be when Jesus comes back?
Make fun of a little joke dirt. Excellent. And it's funny that I say excellent when these aren't wrong answers, because they're experience.
Oh, but
that
it's according to you.
One of the indelible things, too, is ESPN. We watched like our sports exposure, and ESPN, but also talking about something like hockey. Baseball and hockey are the two sports that, say, like, mom is a big fan of. I don't know where she stands on, you know, anything else, but baseball and hockey are the ones that were, you know, all collectively for the most part had been fans of, or had been on. Dad, you know, likes sports, watches sports, we'll get into sports.
Unfortunately, too much sometimes.
Yeah. But so he's a fan of more than just baseball and hockey. But growing up, baseball was the thing that would be more readily available as far as exposure wise, at least for like Matt and I. But hockey was the special thing, because hockey was only on if, when we got that TV in our room, if Matt and I put it on, or if you put it on.
And that really was like a day and age too, where you could like Channel 11 still carried Blues games.
Yeah.
You could still watch like the local, watch the Cardinals, watch the Blues,
Saturdays,
watch the Rams on actual like just channels 1 through, you know, 5, 1 through 10, or main, like the main television, actual broadcast, that public television. I struggle with even now with the words, because we're so far removed from being able to just watch something on regular television. Yeah. Like, what even is regular television anymore? But you had mentioned ESPN. That was something that just jogged memories. I would look forward to in the morning in like middle school and high school. Like, that's where you caught up.
Yes.
Like, you would put on SportsCenter. Uh-huh. And this is before it was so much like exposition. Yeah. Like, it really was
highlights.
It was highlights, and there was the ticker at the bottom. Mm-hmm. They're like, I don't know the score from last night.
Mm-hmm.
I could go run to the front room, but how long is the modem going to take?
Yeah.
Like, I just want to get this information. Mm-hmm. I want to catch some clips. And even think about middle school lunch. We had TVs in the lunchroom, and we were able to watch sports highlights and stuff like that, where, like, SportsCenter was such a big deal in middle school and high school because, you know, I was so into sports and, you know, memorizing almanacs, being so into hockey I was. And that was another TV experience that I looked forward to, even on into, you know, close to college and stuff.
Yeah.
And, before things really started shifting as far as how we consume media, that was fantastic. Like, you really did look forward to those specific times, or even as a family. TGIF was a sit down in front of the TV routine moment. We're home on Friday night, or growing up, like, we're home on Saturday night, and it's the Disney movie. It's Nickelodeon, or it's Nick at Night, or you knew at a certain point, like, okay, I gotta go to bed when, like, you know, after Archie,
All in the Family.
Yeah, All in the Family.
Yeah. Almost said, you know, Linda LLP.
Yeah, after you watch All in the Family, it's about bedtime, or Flip Wilson, or it was like Cher, and you're watching all these old shows.
Cher, it's Sonny and Cher. I know, they showed that on TV Land.
Yeah, it was TV Land. So the stuff you saw before bed, like, so much of growing up, and for better or worse, was in front of a television.
Yeah.
And the television was always on. But even now, I try to celebrate, like, you know, the random Saturday movie that's on Channel 11.
Yeah,
like, it's not a good movie.
No.
But you didn't get
a very specific type of movie.
It's a very specific type of movie, but you didn't have a choice in what you were watching besides this channel or that channel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what was on. And it was the era of VHS, too, where, you know, we sat down as family and we put in a VHS, but there were still those moments where you just put on whatever channel was already available, and there was a Disney movie on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you'd sit around as a family, and this was like some of the little bit of time. Even if we were eating dinner around the coffee table in the living room, not an actual table.
No.
And that's no judgment, Mom.
Of course.
No, I know you're listening.
Not.
Dad, if you just so happen to be listening, there's no judgment there.
No.
But
we
don't know.
Better for it.
Yeah. Like, so you'd asked me about TV routines, and I saw that question. I'm like, man, so much life was lived with the TV on.
Yep.
And even when we get to music, like, there's so much passive consumption now more than ever. But those kind of nostalgia feelings of, like, sitting around as a family, like, watching a movie or just watching shows, and, like, it was the time that we did spend together.
Mm-hmm.
But I did definitely look forward to the ESPN in the morning and Sunday cartoons where I got a chance to breathe, or even just play my video game.
Yeah.
And back in the day when somebody's like, just turn off the video game, or they turn it off for you, and there's no save function.
No.
There's no anything.
Like, I just lost all of that.
Like, I finally get a chance to actually sit down and, like, play this game because either dad's hogging the NES or someone's wanting to use the TV. Fond memories in front of a television.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
You know, especially those kind of late night, kind of go out surfing cable as a 9, 10, 11-year-old for all the reasons. You know, go grab a little snack, practice your sneak assassin footing. You know, it's just late night, and this is something that's changed over the years. I don't like to stay up too late, but growing up, like, that late night, kind of like, I can sneak out, and now's the time where everyone's asleep, and I can actually have a bit of time for myself alone, and, like,
that's,
you know, that's
a
kind
whole
of first taste.
All-encompassing experience.
You know, whether,
And it's not just, oh, it's late night program. It's like, I'm not supposed to
do this. It's not about the scrambled channels and things I was able to see, but it was more about the fact that, okay, I now know everybody's left the living room. Whoever was staying up the latest watching whatever show is now turned off the TV and gone to bed and waiting and waiting.
Yeah.
And waiting. Timing until, okay, now I can hear, like, everyone's kind of falling asleep. And I can kind of, like, tippy toe my way out down the hallway. Almost like Christmas. But, like, to see, like, early on, like, okay, what's there before it actually happens. But it was on a very consistent basis of, like, I can sneak out. And now I have some alone time. Yeah. And I can grab a little snack, grab something from the fridge. I can put on the TV and I can surf around both things I should be watching and things that I really should not have been.
Of course.
Really things I should not. Like, I still, the American History X, I remember, I'm like, I saw that way too soon.
I still don't want to watch it.
Yeah, like, no, the whole curb scene. I remember seeing that as a grade schooler, just going, like, jumping the channel immediately, going, oh, no. And jump. No. I hit the back button because you always had the other program.
Like, did your go case, turn?
Yeah.
Put the on ESPN.
The return button on the remote control, it's like the other tab you have already ready on your computer.
Yep.
Don't know if that's saying too much about myself. But you know how we got
it's not always something nefarious.
You
know, yeah.
But you had the back button ready just in case somebody came in, woke up or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Those were moments I still think about, and I don't think about them often.
But that's your special little window of time.
And sure, there's going to be some flipping around to see what program is on the cable television. But also, it's also your chance to, you know,
have some autonomy.
Watch, you know, baseball tonight's on. It didn't come on in the morning. Like, it usually comes on, you know, 11 o'clock at night. I'll watch baseball tonight. I'll watch NHL Cool Shots. Yeah. They're rerunning it. Like, I'll watch something like that.
You actually have to check the guide that's on the TV. Yeah. Not the TV guide, which was also a godsend, but you actually check the schedule of, like, what, oh, I want to see this movie. Well, when is it going to replay? When am I going to be able to see it later? But even just, like, heck, getting to wake up in the morning and you knew how to use the VHS player and you're like, you knew you had a blank tape and you're like, I don't know when this is, like, X-Men 97 as a late has been absolutely fantastic.
So good.
But, like, growing up, not knowing when an episode is going to air, not knowing, or at least knowing how to check and see, like, when is something going to be on?
Yep.
And when it's going to be there, and cherishing the moment that it's on.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen this one. This is new. Like, pop in a VHS, record it, save it for later. These were all moments that, like, even, like, hearing a song on the radio, you're like, oh my God, I get here. Yeah. It's finally on. I'm waiting for it. I've been waiting for this to hit record so that I can enjoy this later when I have some time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep. I have an exact experience like that, towards just literally sitting by the radio for 3 hours waiting for the song to come back on. So I get my little tape recorder to do it.
Yeah.
And the quality's not going to be good, but at least I have the song.
But you have it, and you can listen to it, which is something that is – I have been enjoying about shows kind of becoming more like we're releasing episodes.
Episodic,
every week. Yeah, exactly.
Episode
what
a week,
TV
yeah.
used to be.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't just binge everything. That you can't just consume everything so quickly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah.
No. We talked about, you know, we mentioned music a few times here. So I think it's time to dial back and talk about music. So, question five, through the years, what songs have stuck with you, whether the meanings changed for you over the years or brings you the same joy, elicits any emotions it hadn't before, but any music, album, song that means something, has meant something?
This was another tough one, just because of how I hesitate to say the word consume, but it's how I consume, how I take in music, how I take in movies, how I take in entertainment now. It's hard for me to remember, and always has been, you know, specific track names, specific lyrics.
Yeah.
I experience music and entertainment things as a whole. And then it's more the memories that come along with it that you remember, or the time and place. Mm-hmm. But definitely right away, and we've talked about it way back, the Incubus, Make Yourself,
20th anniversary.
So the album Make Yourself and the song, the title track Make Yourself. That one stands out more because the music that I was listening to, the entertainment that was available to me and where it was at that time point, it was a lot of contemporary Christian music.
Yeah.
like it was pretty much what I heard. It was what I was exposed to, and being in church and doing church choir, and so much of what I was experiencing, you know, anything that was maybe on the radio, you'd hear it, but I don't know, I'm not thinking about lyrics. I'm just thinking about the song and the sound and everything.
Yeah, instrumentation, the melody.
Yeah, but, you know, kind of as I've explored music, the tipping point kind of was like when Mom bought me the Make Yourself album. It didn't have a parental advisory, but I mean,
you hear
like, and so you hear a lot of stuff and you're exposed to different ideas. And that was a time where, like, again, it was a CD and you had your CDs, and I couldn't just listen to infinite amounts of music. Yeah. You'd listen to what you had. And I had my Discman, my Walkman with the ants. And I could finally start walking around and exploring the area, and I had a little more independence. Yeah. You know, I was, you know, growing up, I was confined to the in front of the house. And then it could become, well, you can go to the end of the street. And then the day I finally was like, I'm taking this bike that I got, and I am heading out, and I'm going, and I'm gone for 2 hours, and Mom's a worried mess. You know, that kind of stuff. You know, finally finding independence, being able to move around, and hearing. Make Yourself over and over, which again, right there in the name of the title, a whole much of the album, most of the album is referring to just kind of thought constructs and identity. How, like, you're kind of like, what is your identity and how much of your identity is your own identity? Especially coming from a contemporary Christian music world. That was a pretty big album. I mean, Beach Boys' Pet Sounds. That was a moment. That came kind of early in college, where you start trying to revisit a lot of stuff in a different context that you were exposed to early on. So, like, Beach Boys, you're like, oh my God, why would I listen to the Beach Boys? Yeah. That is so silly.
Surfer dudes.
But then you actually start finding a deep dive, and you're like, oh my God, Brian Wilson is a genius. And these are all these emotive experiences. And you start kind of waking up to the fact that even pop music, if the artist is good, there's plenty of other material that you can dive into. But overall, this question that you sent to me, thinking about how I listened to music in the 90s, early 2000s, and where my mind was, where my heart was, and what I was into, there's so much contemporary Christian music, but like Five Iron Frenzy was a very... I wouldn't call it subversive because it was all right there and it was all very praiseworthy, but you're not like South Park, like, oh Jesus, oh Jesus, come on me Jesus, it like replacing like, you know, baby with Jesus and kind of creating these very kind of bland songs, which was a lot of the stuff that you would receive. It was very much recycled pop culture stuff, but instead it was just all... It was very singular. So for me growing up, like hearing stuff like Five Iron Frenzy, which was both fun, it both was within the realm of Christian music. It was acknowledging faith, but also...
There's a silliness.
A silliness, but also, like, next thing you know, you're hearing a song about, like, the shame of imperialism.
Yeah.
And how terrible woundedness and how we... How terrible that was, and how we don't even look back at how we treated Native individuals, the ideas of how terrible consumerism is, and these kind of ways that we're manipulated as individuals, all guised in, I don't want to necessarily say Christian ska, but it was all under the guise of ska, ska, or like very thought-provoking moments.
They made it digestible for someone your age.
Exactly. Like, to think about, like, well, here's a song about losing a comb out a window that flew out the window, but it's a very sad song. Like, I remember a time driving down the road, and there was a car on the dashboard, and it flew out the window, and I really liked that car. And so now you're thinking about nostalgia, and it's kind of provoking your thoughts. And even on the way here, I was like, oh, think about this question, because I was struggling with it. I'm like thinking about the time, like specific songs. I can't necessarily think of the genres of music and bands that were so influential, and that was contemporary Christian music, but just how some of the things you found within weren't just mimicking, but they were priming you and preparing you for thoughts you were going to have later on. And that was definitely Five Iron Frenzy. But for me, like, even shoot, listening to it on the way over here, I'm like, that was the closest thing I had to Rage Against the Machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Like, where you think it's kind of a silly thing, but you sit down and you look at it. Yeah, it's different packages, but it's both mm-hmm. the same thing.
Yeah.
It's thought-provoking. Mm-hmm. It's right along the line of being like, are you still questioning? Are you still thinking? Mm-hmm. Of course, one was more mainstream and is like saying, like, you know, fuck this over here,
mm-hmm.
you know, but... you know, like Rage Against the Machine, like, oh my God, like, we're not talking about religion. Fuck religion.
Yeah.
Like, forget that. Like, yeah. We're talking about, like, we're going to do this exposition into, like, how messed up the politics of America are. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about how exploitive we are. We're going to talk about all these social issues that you need to be aware of.
Yeah.
Whether you're just into the music or not, like, you're hearing the words. That was Five Iron Frenzy for me. So that was one of those bands that stuck out. But, you know, this question, I thought a lot about of contemporary Christian music and how it still has this emotional response.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not necessarily happy about.
Sure, I get it.
You know, yeah. But it's one of those things where, you know, I put on a playlist of, like, you know, it's like a youth group mix.
Yes.
You know, yeah, like,
DC,
you know,
Talk,
DC
Audio
Talk,
Adrenaline,
Audio Adrenaline, yeah. You know.
Newsboys.
Yeah, Gramophone, which is another Skillet.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
all these bands that I have good memories of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I think about them within the context of that music.
Yes, yep. Right.
Because, yep. you know, kind of going, it took me to a deeper level because of how, you know, we're talking about the 90s and growing up and these mm-hmm. kind of developmental periods. Middle school was atrocious. I didn't have many friends through grade school. I didn't have a lot of connections outside of the church when I finally got into middle school. So even though life outside of there was always changing, I was feeling all these different ways, mm-hmm. church was always kind of a safe spot.
Sure, yeah.
I was extremely invested in it because that you found love and friends and mm-hmm. understanding and a lot of positive stuff. Which I still hear the stuff, but I enjoy it because of thinking back on those times.
Absolutely.
Right. But also at the same time, I start tearing up.
Yeah.
You know, to come back to the question, like things that make you cry or movies that make mm-hmm. you cry or things like some of these songs, singing them, like I was belting out some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Cause it was right there.
Yeah.
It was so familiar.
Yep.
But it's a mix of emotions as we talk about nostalgia, of both thinking of things so fondly as mm-hmm. they were, and but also trying to marry them realistically with where you are now, mm-hmm. whether it was good or bad at the time,
yeah.
which you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Yeah. As much as I, you know, have my different beliefs, my
sure.
feelings compared to growing up in the church.
Sure.
I was heavily invested, and these were fond memories. These were mm-hmm. good memories. These
yeah.
were not negative things.
Yeah.
So to hear, kind of, you know, go back and listen to some of the stuff I used to listen to back in the day, like OC Supertones.
OC Supertones.
Oh my God! Yeah. Like every song is going to be about kind of the same thing, spiritually, because that's contemporary Christian music for you.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, having Five Iron Frenzy pop up and looking at that again and
yeah.
thinking about just how that was a distinct group for me that I
mm-hmm.
loved so much because of, you know, being my friend Joe Gordon's, one of his best friends,
mm-hmm.
and like just it was so positive and uplifting. But also, before you knew it, you were thinking about things
yeah.
like socially that were going on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then later on, you're like, okay, well, it's not the end of the world if I listen to, you know, Rage Against the Machine. It's
yeah.
not. It's
yeah.
okay to think beyond certain things. You don't have to, everything doesn't have to be under the same hood. It doesn't have
yeah.
to be homogenized. It doesn't have to be what you consume doesn't all have to be squeak clean or
yeah. sanitized.
Or
well,
sanitized.
You said
homogenized. Yeah, you know, it's so,
yeah.
yeah, you can kind of, I don't know, experience different things. So
yeah.
kind of, I don't know, Make Yourself was a massive
album yeah.
for me.
That kind of steps into
yeah.
something like Make
yeah.
Yourself and Five Iron Frenzy kind of steps into both parts of that experience of like, because even when I would, for me personally, would dip my toe in the world of like Christian artists, it was never worship music. So I'm sure unless I had to sing in a church or play it.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like
it was one of those things where, like, nothing really appeals to you with, like, the straight up worship music. So what can I find that appeals to me that they're not overtly, like, praise God, praise Jesus. Oh, something like Five Iron Frenzy. But then there's also that, especially when you were in youth group, like, that experience, especially for 90s, the kids in the late 90s, it's more hammered into you that you don't cross the streams. You don't mix into the world.
Consume secular media. In fact, if you have it, we got a fire tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bring it on in.
Yeah.
We're going to burn your Pantera CD. We're going to burn your poster of Metallica. We're going to destroy this media that's part of the satanic craze and this kind of ultra... I don't know, I'm trying to find the right words for it, but this experience where those that are in charge, those that are above you, have lived their lives and had their mistakes, and also now they're kind of coming back around. They're like, man, in college, if only we had this, or we hadn't been exposed to that. Yeah. And they're kind of guiding your decisions based on their own experiences. Mm-hmm. It really was like, you don't watch certain movies.
Yeah.
You don't listen to certain artists. Like, as an adult, like, I like Perfect Circle. I like Tool, but like I never did a deep dive into any of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here I am as an adult
playing catch up.
Like I'm just putting it on because I'm like, well, I never really dove into it. I enjoyed it. You know, just like Pantera. Like I've never listened. I mean, I could tell you like, oh yeah, it's kind of Pantera. I think that's Pantera.
Yeah.
And it's around you, but then you kind of start doing a deep dive into stuff because you're like, well, this was around.
Yeah.
It's just I shunned so much.
Uh-huh.
And I was so hardlined in what I allowed myself to listen to. Mm-hmm. And Grant, we had like a CD library at church that was, you know, on the Wednesday nights for the youth service and stuff. And it's not even youth service, but the youth program, the youth circus, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
There would be a CD library.
I remember.
And it's like, well, oh, you like this band? Well, here's an alternative to that. Yeah,
it's always the alternative.
Yeah, it's always the alternative. So you almost feel bad like you can't listen to certain kind of music.
Which they was never as good, the alternative.
Yeah, I mean, like, it, you know, even listening to some of these bands, I'm like, oh my gosh, this Skillet song, I remember this. I remember the album artwork, I remember everything.
Yeah.
But I never at the time realized it's just a direct ripoff of Silverchair. Like, just a straight, like, and I don't want to ever put down an artist and say that was a straight ripoff, but like, that's why they were signed. That's why they were pushed.
Mm-hmm.
That's why their music came into my life, is because it was a mirror image of this thing. I didn't even know it was mirroring because it, even that was like, oh my God, I'm up late and I'm watching a Nine Inch Nails video.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't, oh, I shouldn't be doing that. Shouldn't be doing that. So,
yeah. The allure of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the music that sticks with me, from that general period of time was anything that was new or different, that kind of opened up my eyes, or at least even within the realm of, contemporary Christian music that was, I'm not going to say subversive, but it was thought provoking.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
touching on issues more than just, you know, Jesus, loving Jesus. Cause life is so much like, you know, even if you're within Christianity, like that invades your life. I don't know. Kind of starting to head down away there. That I don't want to talk too much about religion.
Okay,
no, spirituality, of course not.
That was an influential period of time as far as music and development and what you consumed.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, Make Yourself and Five Iron Frenzy kind of being there at the same time, and then you know, Renegades of Funk came out, and it kind of exposed me to music that I'd never heard because I was like, oh well, that's I only know that as Rage Against the Machine because I'm only hearing certain songs at certain times, and then I'm like, oh well, that's a different band, and that's something I never even heard about, which later on when I was able to kind of open up my mind to different genres of music and kind of get out of that Christian only realm, those were things that had the pump primed for me to listen and to hear and enjoy the massive world of music that is out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And definitely listening to The Point helped. The 1057 The Point.
Great. Yeah.
And
then, too,
like, man. And that was another thing I started thinking about is just, you know, between media consumption, like where your routines were and songs you heard and like things that stick with you. And that's one of them. is the Gran Turismo 2 soundtrack.
Yep. Mm-hmm. PlayStation.
Garbage.
And, oh, yeah.
Is always
Monster been Magnet.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. A lot of it too was like I started hearing stuff by
Rob Zombie.
Yeah, not just Rob Zombie, but Stone Temple Pilots. But yeah. Again, you know, another band that you're like, you listen to some stuff now, and you're like, yeah. Oh well.
Or Fear Factory. I said Monster Magnet. Fear
Factory.
Yeah,
yeah, but you know, you listen to it now, and you're like, oh wow, I was really into that song, but you know, the message isn't exactly
yeah
in line with maybe some things to think, but. Yeah, I finally got to see and to hear things that, again, going to TRL, that was not part of the acceptable consumption of pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do think fondly of TRL. I do think fondly of The Point.
Yeah.
Because these were all things that, even though I was very much in this conservative mindset and world, allowed me to still remember that there's something beyond that.
Yeah.
So when it did come time to start questioning and really thinking more about who I was and what I wanted for my life, media's a big part of that.
Yeah.
As far as the things that influence us through development. Can't say I want to forget all of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there were good things, but it's, you know.
It
was a difficult thing to start thinking about because it was a difficult period of time.
Peel and especially, back a lot of kind of layers and stuff.
Yeah, and just how much music and the media that we consume kind of finds its way in and infiltrates those layers.
Yep. Yeah.
So, so again, these, you know, talking about nostalgia, a lot of these questions really started leading me down roads where I'm like, these are hard memories to come across.
Sure.
And hard things to come up with specific answers for, because they are so much associated with who I was at the time, developing as a kid, you know, and where I was at the time compared to where I am now, as you make your own way and, you know, kind of decide what you think about yourself and who you are.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard sometimes to go back and pull out specifics because it was so long ago, but also because it is so much ingrained with who you were at the time and maybe things you don't necessarily like about yourself or things that you aren't too happy about.
Totally. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, done the last question here, we can start talking about things that maybe have a more, I'd say positive lean, as if none of this has been negative, but I do see where you're coming from. Sometimes you have to have the recall of like, there's this, and then it triggers, okay, I have to peel back this in order to kind of
like even now I'm looking at Matt's wearing a Deftones shirt. It's White Pony. And I'm like, that was a band that, like, in middle school, I'd see a shirt, I'm like, Deftones. And now I'm like, I absolutely love Deftones.
Yeah.
Like, it's a band that... even talking about music, kind of going back a little bit, I started thinking more about concerts
that
were influential and not so much just albums or music, but like the shows that I finally got to go to. And seeing Deftones with you guys was one of them. Just like the Make Yourself reunion was fantastic. Even music, I was just kind of generally exploring, but like seeing Elvis Costello, which is not a band that I would not have seen.
Sure.
Elvis Costello in middle school or high school, but exploring music and stuff that was around even before that period of time and getting to see it live and kind of getting to experience it is a bit of a time travel.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So talking about you now on the final question, your favorite piece of media right now? And you're wearing a shirt that reminds me of...
So I wore this shirt specifically.
Yes.
Joe Pera... talks to you.
Yes. It's so wonderful.
Just, I don't know. I'm going to hem and haw, and we're going to put out the best, greatest hits of my hem and haw with this, with this podcast.
So great.
But talking about media that, again, a lot of these questions had to do with how things affect you emotionally and how you view them, how you take them in, and what they mean to you.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things that I feel the most are characters and individuals that you don't have to interpret.
Yeah.
They are just individuals, whether it be a bit or their actual individuality, that, again, I struggle with the word pure because no one's perfect or anything.
Sure. Wholesome.
But it's wholesome, but it's not ignorant. It might come off as naive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It might come off as very, you know, hokey. or a little too clean cut. But yeah. Joe Parra talks to you. Joe Parra, as a comedian, as an individual, as it seems, mm-hmm. I love his content.
Yeah.
Because it is just enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe Parra talks to you, 11-minute episodes.
Yeah.
Is just enjoyable. It's mm-hmm. funny in a very oddball, quirky way.
Yes. It's on Adult Swim, but, so that gives you kind of an idea.
HBO Max, Adult Swim, Joe Parra talks to you. It's just sit down, enjoy for 11, 12 minutes at a time, and you feel good.
Yeah.
And you feel nice. You're not worried about what's going on in the Middle East. It's not like going and checking out the news or anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You just watch this, and here is this individual in this town of half of them can't be actual actors.
Yeah,
it's regular, just very regular people.
Yeah. Their interactions are so inoffensive, and they're not like super theatrical. It's just regular people.
He is a 80-year-old man in a 30-year-old man's body with the bald spot. He's a middle school teacher in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Yeah.
And it's just
interesting the most mundane things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like first episode, we're going to talk about rocks. Mm-hmm. Here's my friend Gene, who's a rock hound. But like you start off with these mundane topics, but he becomes very real and very relatable. Even if it's absurd, kind of the situation, it's human. It's real. It's not elaborate. It's just enjoyable. It's funny. It's
so funny
to the point. It's 11 minutes, 12 minutes an episode. Yeah. Like you feel for these characters.
Yep.
It's not just the show itself too, but the score that they use, everything about it is just
so heartwarming.
It's heartwarming. You don't almost want to say wholesome because that turns some people off.
But it's not like prude wholesome.
I've seen that show 6 times through. Every episode I've seen 6 times because it's comfort.
Yeah.
It makes you smile. It's a warm blanket. If I'm feeling a certain way or I just don't know what to watch or I'm trying to put something on to fall asleep to, or I just want to put something on in the background because I need to do some work. But I know that this is going to make me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
It's Joe Parra talks with you. Like, and anything that Joe Parra does, I enjoy thoroughly. I hope he's not just putting on an act. And if he is, and he's a fantastic character, actor, and comedian, but it's just, it's a beautiful mix of even his most recent stand-up. You get that kind of Joe Parra talks to you innocence and mid-America kind of just, oh, how you doing? Oh, how you doing?
Yeah.
You know, kind of very nice and polite.
Delivery is funny.
Yeah, the delivery is funny, but he's clearly not an ignorant individual.
No.
He is not a naive individual. He just doesn't see a need in doing some of the things that raise an eyebrow or catch your attention.
Yeah.
It's just enjoyable with the family, by yourself.
Totally.
It's just hits me in the heart and is enjoyable, and it's a comfort.
It's so,
so Joe Parra Talks to You is, I can't stop recommending it to people. Mm-hmm. And even now, like, I still, if I'm on my own and I don't know what else to watch,
I'll just put it on.
And I'm just looking to surf my phone or I'm looking to just go about my business. I'll put it on because I know I'm going to come away feeling good, but also enjoying how it is subtle. It's not just, you know, some of the comedy that I've enjoyed in the past where it beats you over the head or anything Will Ferrell that you're just like, oh, well, it can become extreme. It can become like in your face, which nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But especially in a day and age of, I don't know. There's a trauma every day. There's a problem every day. Yeah. Like, we're experiencing so many shifts, and it's all in real time, that it's a nice, slow enough show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, he describes himself as the slow comedian. But even later on, I was like, wait, maybe he doesn't just mean pace-wise, but people think he's kind of a little slow himself,
dumb
himself. But that's not the case. It's very intelligent.
Yeah.
It's very considerate. Twists and turns where you needed to.
Yeah.
But absolutely love it. And right now, I am wearing a shirt. It has a bean arch on it.
Yes.
Season 2, episode 1. He starts talking about bean arches and his love for beans and but it always comes back to his love for family, his love for his community.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But also who are we and what do we have to give to each other? And, and it's funny.
It's so wonderful.
It's great.
Such a sweet, quaint, simple show in this world that just barrages you and bombards you with like the out of this world, like absurdist, like loud comedy and also just, you know, raunchy and dirty humor. And this by no means is a show that browbeats that, but if like all your options with comedy are sometimes just super crass, super like in your face and almost obnoxious, but something like Joe Pera Talks to You, which was on Adult Swim, which considering how absurd Adult Swim was, it's funny it was there, but
it has just enough absurdity still fit in with the, you know, why am I forgetting the name of
like Steve Brule, like the Tim and Eric.
Brule. Exactly. Or, you know, Robot Chicken.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's subtle. It's a sweet, quaint, cozy show. And it just makes you feel warm. It just brings a smile to your face.
Yep.
And that's what we hope to accomplish with all of you here when you listen to the show.
Almost 2 hours on from us starting this recording.
Yes. We hope, though.
That's what we get out of
it. We hope it is quaint. We hope it is a comfort to all of you. And we're glad to do it. We're glad to do it. Andrew, thank you for joining us.
Thank you again.
Thank you for having me. It's been a minute since I've been on the show, it's just been a minute since I've gotten to hang out with the two of you.
Yeah.
And together, even if we're not necessarily getting caught up, you don't always have to get caught up. You just get to enjoy the presence and companionship and the friendship that has, I don't know, you're my brothers. And I did not always see you as friends. But now it's nice that we get to come together and still catch up and also, you know, I was a little nervous about the podcast because, again, it's not necessarily my thing.
But yeah.
Glad I could be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Speaking of wholesome.
Oh, boy.
What media makes you cry? Not this, because I turned it off an hour ago. Like, God, gets a point.
Exactly.
You guys turn it back and they're still on. It's like we're on the radio or something.
But maybe one day we'll be on something on the radio getting paid for this shiz.
Maybe.
But hey. Whether we are or not, we're all here for you because you're here for us. And thank you for joining us. And until the next time,
be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you want to be rude when you can be rad? See you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.